This is the son of PCJ. Shortwave listening, to many the final frontier. These are the voyages of PCJ Radio's Media Network Plus. Its continuing mission to track down strange new signals and to seek out new stations and radio personalities and to boldly go where many men have gone before.
Hello, I'm Paulette McQuarrie and welcome to the program. Coming up today, Keith is somewhat well-rested after flying halfway around the world to attend the SWL Winterfest in Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania, in the United States of America. He'll be joining us to talk about some of the strange radio activity that was happening at the fest. Media Network Plus. All right, seatbelts fastened, and away we go. First, here's Keith with a look at some of the headlines from the world of media.
After a meeting February 17th, the administrative board of the Greek public broadcaster, ERT, ordered the switch-off of 11 medium-wave transmitters. Whereas only 9 medium-wave transmitters with the respective programs of the Greek public radio will keep operating. In fact, it is the high-powered transmitters that survived, most of which are located near the border and have been used previously for the international network of ERA. Additionally, ERT retains the frequency of the first radio service, 729, and Philia 666 from Artica, and also one of the ERA's sports channels, 792, hosted by the former Voice of America transmitter that was reinstalled in 2002. The chairman of Jamaica's Broadcasting Commission, Professor Hopeton Dunn, has warned holders of island-wide broadcasting licenses that their permits are meant to serve all areas of Jamaica. He said that in some rural areas, the reception of the services provided by holders of island-wide licenses was below standard. Many of the island-wide providers, particularly for broadcasting services, are not being properly heard in rural areas, and citizens are not getting the quality of reception that they should be getting from their radio and from their television services, he said. The Italian cell of the anonymous hacking collective has leaked the personal data of journalists at Vatican Radio as part of its fight to force the station to act over alleged cancer-causing radio waves. In a statement, the hacktivists blame Vatican radio waves for causing high cancer rates and publish personal information about the station's journalists in an effort to pressure the station to act. The hacktivists' claim was based on a 2010 report conducted by the National Cancer Institute into cancer deaths between 1980 and 2003 in the Rome suburb where Radio Vatican transmitters are located. Italy's Supreme Court ordered Vatican Radio to pay damages to Cilino's residents in February 2011 in a case brought over a cluster of leukemia cases traced to radio wave levels exceeding legal limits. A Vatican spokesman denied the allegations, saying that Vatican Radio followed international laws on electromagnetic emissions. Reporters Without Borders has included 12 countries on its latest list of enemies of the Internet. Since the last report was published March 12, 2011, Bahrain and Belarus have moved from under surveillance to enemies. Libya and Venezuela have dropped from the list of countries under surveillance, while India and Kazakhstan have been added to it. The 2012 list of enemies is Bahrain, Belarus, Burma, China, Cuba, Iran, North Korea, Saudi Arabia, Syria, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, and Vietnam. A special thank you goes to Andy Sennett at Radio Netherlands Worldwide for the stories used. If you want more information, go to our website, www.pcjmedia.com, and you'll see a link to the Media Network site at the bottom of the page.
Call the BCJ answer line at country code 44-20-3286-1399. That's country code 44-20-3286-1399 and leave your comments and questions. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is BCJ Radio.
And you're listening to Media Network Plus on satellite, shortwave, and domestic FM and medium wave stations. Now, we have a special treat for listeners of Media Network Plus. We'll be giving away a book this week, so stay tuned for details. They'll be coming up at the end of the show. From March 1st to 3rd, Keith was attending the SWL Winterfest in the United States. This year was the 25th anniversary of the fest, and as always, it brought together listeners and broadcasters to discuss, what else, radio. We'll have a number of reports over the next few weeks on many aspects of the fest, so stay tuned for that. This week, however, we look at a tradition at the fest. So, Keith, you spent a bit of time on the North American continent recently, and you're back now in Taiwan. And while you were in North America, you were at the SWL Fest. What happened there? How was it?
Well, the SWL Fest, I can sum it up this way. Interesting, fun, informative, and also wacky, all combined into one big stew. That's the best way that I can describe it. It was very interesting. It was also a lot of fun to meet people whose names I knew, but I never met them face to face. It was also fun to meet former colleagues of mine that I'd worked with over, well, nearly 20 years ago. So it was very informative, very busy, and my microphone and recorder were constantly going.
So what were some of the surprising things that that you weren't expecting?
Some of the surprising things? Well, the surprising thing, I think, most of all, was how informative a lot of the forums were. There was one forum on internet radio that was extremely interesting. It looked at the early days of internet radio, and the guy actually had one of the first internet radios there that was fascinating because you go to a station, you choose it, and then there shows a percentage, right? So it's like 1%. 2% loading, 3% loading. By the time the program is playing, the show that you wanted to listen to was over. So it was really interesting to see, you know, how far we have come. Even though it wasn't a big jump, we still have a long way to go. It was still nevertheless interesting. There were also interesting forums on radio in the third world. The discussion from Radio Free Asia was extremely interesting. I mean, it was just, I don't even know where to begin, but I'm sure that if you continue listening to Media Network Plus over the next few weeks, you'll have an insight of what it was like. The only criticism I have is even though this year was the 25th anniversary and it was one day longer, so it was 3 days instead of the normal two, I still felt it was very short. The time just flew by.
Well, that's, I guess, a good problem for the organizers to have then. People are complaining that it was too short.
Yeah, exactly.
So among the many other things you mentioned, internet radio, and it was all about shortwave radio and other kinds of radio, but there is one that, a topic, a kind of radio that is sort of hush-hush. Was there anything like that there?
I take it you're referring to pirate radio, right?
I am indeed.
Yes, there were three pirates on the air. I actually was one of them.
Oh.
And I was running in my room a transmitter with an antenna inside the room. And, I, you know, when I had it set up and the cleaning staff would come in, I was always thinking to myself, what must they be thinking, you know, with these wires and all this stuff scattered around over the place. But, yes, there were three pirate stations running. And I decided to go and visit one of the other guys, and I've known him for quite some time. His name is Steve Carlock. So let's actually now go from when I headed out to my room to where his station was set up. One of the other things about the SWL Fest that's actually quite interesting is not just the forums that take place, but also the radio activity. And you're saying to yourself, wait a second, what do you mean by radio activity? Well, we have to be quiet about it, you know, but there are, of course, a number of pirates on the premise.
myself included. We're going to be heading to one of them right now to look at his setup. It is quite fascinating. In some ways, it makes it look like a Dr. Wizard experience going mad. So I'm standing in front of the door right now, room 547. I'll knock. One of the most interesting things I've noticed so far about the SWL Fest is there's going to be a number of different pirates that are going to be showing up, and you have a setup here that when I looked at it yesterday, I was like, this is Mr. Wizard on some type of medication.
Yeah, this is definitely not your typical FM setup. Most of the things, like self-contained units. Like I have a Panaxis FME 500 that I bought as a kit, 1995. And it's in its case, but there's no cover on it, so it's kind of open and you can see the guts. And then there's an amplifier that amplifies it like up to 15 watts. And as you can see, I have an inadequate size heatsink, so I have these big metal clamps on there to help take the heat away.
Okay, and this is safe, right?
Oh, yeah. It's just drawing heat from the aluminum into the clamps because it's kind of that needs to be...
Mm-hmm. So how are you feeding everything? I see a laptop next to it, but you were showing me a really interesting software yesterday.
Oh, yeah, Stereo Tool, which is pretty cool. It's basically a Winamp plugin, or you could use it with, like, Sam Broadcaster. And it has, like, your input, how much audio you're putting in and how much audio you're pushing out. It has right here the azimuth. You could correct that, correct your stereo if you need to be. If it's, like, an old tape that has the bias, with the shifting back and forth, different things, like all kinds of multi-band compression. Look at all the sliders. I mean, look at all that stuff right there.
The thing that's really interesting about this, and this is I don't even know how to describe it, but you're also broadcasting an RDS.
And this is the best part. Not only RDS, but this program right here is generating the stereo pilot tone. Uh-huh. For to be stereo. It's just a mono output, a composite actually is what it's called. It goes into that, which is wired to accept the composite audio from here, which is, basically all your audio intelligence that's encoded in the 19 kilohertz pilot tone. And also the RDS, you can input your own thing, like I have right here, WBZO 87.9, SWL Fest Special Event Station, and those are all separate. They will scroll just like blink one per time there.
WBZO.
So here, let me ask you then, how did you get interested in this? What started it all? Did you just wake up one day and say, I want to have a radio station?
I don't know. I was always a big-time radio listener, okay? And I guess I was always the type of person that said, gee, I could do this better, or I have an idea that I'd like to do this, and I think I could play better music or come up with something better, So I did research on other pirates that were in the UK on FM. But I never thought about like shortwave or medium wave or anything like that. And then I was in high school and somebody said, I know where to find a transmitter. Because I'd always be talking to my friends, yeah, let's get on the radio. Turns out it was a signal generator. So I took the signal generator and tried it. Didn't really do much. And somehow over time I managed to use like cable TV amplifiers, and the Radio Shack used to have an FM amplifier. It was a 25 dB gain, you hook it up to your antenna, your receive antenna, and to your receiver. Well, I put it backwards, like push the signal out towards the antenna from the signal generator, and I was able to get like a couple mile radius with that,
That simple.
Yeah, but the funny thing was the transmitter drifted. Well, the signal generator was very drifty, so it didn't stay on frequency. It drifted quite fast. The only digital tuner I had to check to see if I was on frequency was up in my car, so I would run from the basement all the way up, press press tune, seek, it would go by, come down again, just barely touch the button, mm-hmm. and go back and forth and do that.
And did anybody look at you and go, Steve's having a breakdown of some kind?
My friend asked me, well, what do you need to do that for? I said, well, if someone's going by and they scan, they're not going to get the signal because they're going to go right by if it's between. You know, I said, we got to pick up potential listeners that just might be happen to be scanning their signal right now, mm-hmm. which would probably be nothing because it was in the middle of nowhere and there wasn't much people.
So I'm looking at this right now and it really looks extraordinary. Now, what about the antenna? Where is the antenna?
Oh, the antenna.
Let's get to the antenna, actually.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken, this looks like some type of old TV antenna.
It is. It's a recycled TV antenna that was in the trash. Janice and I, remember we pulled that one out, or you found it and pulled it out of the trash?
Oh, is that the one?
Yeah, yeah. One day it was in the trash. So it made it to the back of the yard, and it sat there for a long time, and I felt inspired. I felt inspired one day, and I found this plan online. So I decided I'm going to make it entirely out of that that old TV antenna.
Really, when I see it all, I look kind of worried because at the other side where you have the transmitter, I'm like, I'm just afraid to be around here. And then I see this, it's like I'm afraid to blow on it in case of fear of falling over.
It's pretty solid.
Well, you do have a note on it. It says, please do not touch or move this. Thanks.
Well, yeah, because yesterday the maid bumped it first because I was down in my car, like we were saying about driving around, checking the signal around the parking lot. I was checking it and I could hear it like cutting in and out because I just left the room and the maid was up here. She came in. So I was like, uh-oh, the maid's bumping stuff.
Well, you know, so the maid hasn't been back yet today.
Well, you know, here's a funny story. This morning I was putting out something and I had a microphone connected up and the maid came in early. And her talking was, she was just talking to us at random, and I was trying to do something, and it was just going on the air. And then she realized, why is my voice coming out of the radio over here?
Really? Oh, man.
Oh, no, that's funny.
I wonder what she thought then.
Well, what does she think of anybody? I mean, you walk into a room, you see something like this, you see all these wires being strung around everywhere, you just... What it must be going through their mind.
And especially this setup, because this is, like you said, it's like some kind of weird, almost like a mad scientist or something put it together. Because it's not your, you know, your average, you know, I mean, there's like nice, you can buy nice units and people have their nice coax and stuff. Well, I always had to do things on a budget because I never had a lot of money. So I had to put things together whichever way I could. Mm-hmm. And they usually work, and they usually work pretty damn good. But if you look at them, they're kind of like, wow.
Kind of sketchy.
But boy, they work though.
Have you ever had any type of mishap?
Yeah, actually. I'm doing some shortwave pirating with a big old 1957 Johnson Viking Valiant. And I was pushing it a little too hard, and there were some capacitors right down near the bottom, underneath the chassis. And they blew, and they caught on fire. And I'm broadcasting. All of a sudden, there's smoke coming up. And I go to hit the switch to turn it off, and I realize as I'm doing that, I see the flames shooting up out of the back. You know, I'm like, what the hell do I do now? You know, I can't pour water on it. I don't know what I did. I think I just stood there like an idiot, and then it went out because it just eventually burned the capacitor. But
It burned itself out.
There was no more fuel left.
It burned your house down.
Well, it did leave. I had it on a Formica table, and it did leave. There's a burn hole that's about as big as a quarter. They're a constant reminder of that time when that capacitor kind of caught on fire.
So is this the only setup that you have, or do you have others as well?
This is the only thing I usually bring here, is just a little FM, but I have quite an extensive, you know, HF pirate operation somewhere.
Even for shortwave?
Oh, yeah, especially for shortwave.
And what kind of power do you have on that?
It's that Johnson Viking Valiant, which 250 watts.
So with a 250 watt HF transmitter, what kind of distance do you get on that? Or does it really it's like FM, it really depends on the antenna.
It depends. Uh-huh. You know, it's definitely the antenna is a big part of it too. But it's just the conditions, just like anything else. I mean, there was times when I was heard from the East Coast to the West Coast with signals that were like 40 over S9 on one particular occasion. Mm-hmm. But usually it's about a 500-mile radius using 7 megahertz, you know, 43 meters.
Small stations like the one you're running here and the one I'm running in my room at 88 point... I actually changed to 88.2 because I was getting interference from 88.5.
Oh, there you go. You're on the international, you know, the Euro band there.
Yeah, so I moved down a bit. You know, E-Skip. Ooh. With this kind of station, would it happen as well that just by chance it would just go so far only for a few minutes and then return back to normal?
You know, I think it's entirely possible. Most of the E-Skip, I like to do a lot of that too when the season comes around. But when you look up the stations, most of them are 50, 100 kilowatts. And, you know, and they really have the drive to get up there and come right back down, you know. But there have been stations that have been translators. And I think even people have heard LPFMs via E-Skip with 20, 30 watts. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely possible, I guess, depending on the intenseness of the ionization, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, because I think, like, right now, your station and the one that I'm running, the antennas are inside the room, inside a building with steel and concrete. But I'm surprised at how far we can still reach. Last night when I was heading out to dinner at the mall, not far from the hotel, I brought a radio with me, and the signal only cut out just as I was crossing the street.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty good, considering, like you said, being inside this Faraday cage that they call a hotel.
I mean, imagine how far we'd go if we actually put the antennas on the roof.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had them up on the roof at the other, at the Culpsville, mm-hmm. at the inn at Towamencin. I actually, 2 years ago, this very antenna, when I built it, they were remodeling the old Best Western, and I found some scrap metal in the dumpster, and I bolted it together, pieces. And I ended up taking off the screen, which I had to drill the screws out, because they were drills of screws you're not supposed to tamper with. So I drilled them out, took the screen off.
Which is the reason why the SWO Fest has never returned to that hotel.
You got that right. And I somehow, I hoisted it out the window, okay, and then I took this clamp and I clamped it to the window. And I was able to get this antenna above the parapet wall of the roof, which was perfect. However, when I was building it, or actually putting it out the window, I had a pair of vice grips, and I dropped them, and this was from the fourth floor, and just so happened to be down three floors was the owners or whatever superintendents of the motel, was an Indian woman was outside, and I dropped it, and she jumped, and I stuck my head back in the window. I wanted to see where it came from, but obviously there's this antenna stuck out the window.
Remind me, actually, you know, if it does happen one day that I'm looking for somebody who's an engineer, never to hire you. Either you'll set the equipment on fire or you'll injure people with flying tools.
Yeah, well, I'm not certified.
And he also takes,
I might be certified with something else, but not in engineering.
He also takes apart household appliances to get wires or whatever he needs.
Oh, that must be nice.
No, he has no respect for any type of appliance or electronic device that's in anywhere within a mile. If he needs a part, he's going to take apart whatever he needs to find that part. So beware.
Well, there's a picture of me somewhere, an old Polaroid, of me sitting at my grandparents' dining room table, and I have their VCR completely apart. This is like 1982, you know?
He wants to take stuff apart.
Oh, yeah, because I wanted to see how it worked, how it was built.
The question is, can you put it back together?
Most times, at that time, when I was 9 years old, absolutely not. But now I try not to take things apart that I can't put back together.
More or less.
No, I'm pretty good with that now.
You never got the Fujitsu back together, that old laptop. There was parts missing you never lost track of.
Well, there's a reason. That was different time.
that was
a more lost time.
The station that does not loaf around. We're WBZO.
Over the next few weeks, Keith will be bringing us more reports on the SWL Winterfest. This week, as mentioned earlier in the show, we'll be giving away a copy of a new book written and autographed by author Kevin Carey. The title of the book is Listening to Long Wave, The World Below 500 Kilohertz. To be eligible to win a copy, you need to answer the following question. What is the BBC Radio 4 long wave frequency? Again, the question is, what is the BBC Radio 4 long wave frequency? You can send your answers to mnp@pcjmedia.com, and we'll announce the winners on next week's show. Propagation has been a little problematic over the last 2 weeks. What can we expect over the next 7 days? With the answer, here's Dan Hensley.
The 10.7 centimeter flux will be 105 from March 17th to March 19th. A 10.7 centimeter flux of 110 the rest of the week from March 20th to March 23rd. The A index will be 15 on March 17th. An A index of 10 on March 18th, and the rest of the week from March 19th to March 23rd, the A index will be 5. A KP index of 3 on March 17th and 18th, the KP index will be 2 from March 19th to March 23rd, 2012. Two sunspot groups are departing this week, and 3 new sunspot groups are in view. 1428 and 29 are the departing spots, with 1432, 33, and 34 in view. Over the last many days, propagation has been affected by strong coronal mass ejections that became strong geomagnetic storms, ruining propagation for satellite and HF frequency ranges. According to spaceweather.com, departing sunspot AR1429 unleashed another strong flare on March 13th, an N7 class eruption that peaked around 1741 UTC. Although the sunspot is no longer directly facing Earth, the blast will affect our planet. Analysts at the Goddard Space Weather Lab say a coronal mass ejection is en route to Earth, and its impact on March 15th at 620 UTC plus or minus 7 hours could trigger minor to moderate geomagnetic storms.
Thanks, Dan. And with that, we've come to the end of the program. Once again, if you'd like to enter to win a copy of Listening to Long Wave, The World Below 500 Kilohertz, autographed by the author Kevin Carey, just answer the question, what is the BBC Radio 4 long wave frequency? You can send your answers to mnp@pcjmedia.com, and you can also use that address to send your comments, questions, and suggestions. Again, it's mnp@pcjmedia.com. So, on behalf of Keith Perron and Dan Hensley, this is Paulette McQuarrie saying bye for now. See you soon.